Well, good morning. As I mentioned at the beginning of the service, we just got back from a mission trip. It seems like it's been weeks because we had the teen conference in between and the church in the park. But this has been our first opportunity to get to present to you a little bit about our trip. So I would say, you know, our three main goals were that we would grow, the people that were on the team would grow in our faith, that we would encourage the local church down in Managua, and that we would reach the city. And so my prayer this morning is that as we look at these things, that it would encourage our hearts as well. So let's pray, and then we'll dive right in. Father, I thank you for this opportunity to share, and I just ask that you would work in our hearts, that we would be more committed to you as a result of hearing about your work. That you're at work all over the world, worldwide. And we praise and thank you for your work. And now, each one of us, just take a moment silently. Just commit yourselves to the Lord afresh and ask the Lord to work in your hearts this morning as well. Amen. Well, the Indy Church, we partnered on this trip with Indianapolis, Eagle Creek, where Chris is from. Oh, first I want to mention that we have some newlyweds that are back for the first time from their honeymoon. In the back, give them a big hand. All right. Welcome back. And last week, the Indy Church, Eagle Creek, presented their mission presentation at their church, encouraged their local church body. So I said to Scott, the pastor down there, I said, can you email me your presentation? That's how we, minimize our workload. And so I took this is his presentation. I swapped out a bunch of photos with our people rather than their people and added a few more things. But he's a numbers guy. They like numbers down there. So he put together by the numbers that we actually traveled 4,400 miles. I'm trusting Scott for this stuff, okay? So these are Scott's numbers. We had 28 missionaries on our team, and 14 were from Glen Arbor Plus. And I say Glen Arbor Plus, somehow associated with Glen Arbor, like the McLeans had, you know, their whole extended family came, you know, like their grandfather and uncle. And then Ed Molina, who was in our church but lives in Alabama, he came along with us too, and he was a great help as interpreter. Here's some of the McLeans now. And so we had 14. We didn't raise much money. Anna did some, and we did have a clothing drive in the last fall that we brought down to Nicaragua, but Indy had a major fundraiser. They covered 40% of each of their missionaries' cost to go to Nicaragua, plus, on top of that, an extra $6,400 that was used for funds for the supplies that we used. I felt kind of bad. I said to Scott, you know, you guys are carrying the whole load here, and he said Lord's blessed. That's the way the Lord worked it out, and they're happy to do that. So they raised $6,400 that paid for all our supplies, our ministry materials, construction materials, medical clinic supplies, the whole nine yards. And as a result, we had 15 large suitcases packed full of supplies that we brought down with us. And we got through customs and got them all there. We distributed at least 2,000 gospel tracts while we were there, and hundreds of people heard the gospel message, literally hundreds of people. Everywhere we went, everything that we did, we shared the gospel every day, all the time. We're in the medical clinic sharing the gospel, at the construction site sharing the gospel, we're at the school sharing the gospel. And dozens, and we were going to keep track of the numbers, but we just didn't get around to it, but dozens received Christ as their Savior, dozens and dozens. Everywhere we went, it was just incredible. Scott and I were talking about it. It's just such low-hanging fruit. Everyone there is just ripe, ready to hear the good news. It's good news. They haven't heard the good news that actually Christ died for their sins and that he offers eternal life for all who will believe in him and receive him as Lord and Savior. And so we saw dozens and dozens of people just ready to hear everywhere we went to hear the message of the gospel. Such a contrast to the United States and other places that we've shared with. This is the team. This is actually the 28 of us with our translators, because we had four translators from Honduras plus local translators, and I think the pastors and their families are in this photo as well. So that's our team in the church. And we kept busy for six solid days, 2 days of travel, and then six solid days of mission activity. And we kept busy. When you see this overview, you'd be like, wow, how did you cram that all in 6 days? And I'm not sure how we did. But the Lord provided the people and the time and everything we needed. This is a hotel that we stayed at. And afterwards, so we kind of needed that, us kind of comfy, you know, soft Americans need our AC at night, you know, and a little pool to take a little dip in, and some of the youth and young adults played cards at night around the pool, and they would serve us breakfast here in the morning, a Nicaraguan breakfast, but they'd throw in like a box of cornflakes or something, you know, because they knew we needed a little more than red beans and rice. And transportation, the church rented a budget bus that came with a bus driver. So he was with us all the time, everywhere we went. And some of the locals in the church got to share the gospel with him and encourage him in his faith. And he was just so amazed at what we were doing. He was riveted. Everything that we did, he watched. And he just thought it was the greatest thing. And he drove us around. He could maneuver around the smallest places. You wouldn't believe it. With this 30-passenger bus. Food, we ate strictly mostly Honduran and Nicaraguan food, and some of the local women, one woman that's on staff with the church cooked for us. Some of our people had the opportunity to help her cook fried plantains and different things like that, and so it was a great experience for some of our team members. But we'd eat together at the church, lunch and dinners for the most part. This is the church, Iglesia Gran Comisión. That's a Great Commission Church of Managua. On the left is their rented building, two-story building, that was kind of our headquarters where they have all their meetings out of. And then on the right is some land that they're praying about purchasing. Their vision is to build a whole ministry center in Managua. This land is just up the street a mile or two from where their current building is, so it's close to their neighborhoods and the contacts. It's surrounded by universities. And there's a bus stop right in front of the land. And it's a really ideal location. And it's commercial property, so it's a little more expensive than residential. But they've started a building fund. They've started raising money within their church. And they're expanding. And their goal is to buy the land a piece at a time. And first buy a piece and build their medical clinic. Buy another piece, build a nutrition center, et cetera, et cetera, and to build it up. So one of the leaders down there, I thought this summed up what we experienced in their lives and how they live, and their vision is to fill heaven with souls and earth with disciples. That's why they're there, to fill heaven with souls and earth with disciples. And that's how they live, day in and day out in the gospel. These are the two pastors, Lisandro and Angel, and we were lucky enough. The week that we were there, they celebrated their 10-year anniversary as a church plant. So these are the pastors and all the deacons up front. All the deacons are local men in Managua that they're discipling into and raising up as the next generation of leaders. So here they all are together cutting the cake. I think all the deacons are cutting the cake together to celebrate their 10-year anniversary. One of the things we did in the church is we assisted with their church services. So we had teams that played music at a couple of the services, not Sunday morning, but a Friday night service and Monday. And I think that's Evie. I had her pass out toys on Sunday morning to the kids that came to church. The team members loved it when I said, how about you do this? And it was great just to have everybody active and involved in the work. And then on Friday night, we led the church service. We did the music. I got to preach, and we had testimonies. Grace here is sharing her testimony, and this was pretty cool. She threw off the translator because she gave her testimony in Spanish. So the translator had to interpret it in English. He got kind of mixed up, but he did a good job, and it was cool to have Grace share her testimony in Spanish on the field. We also had some good church fellowship time throughout the week, but Sunday night especially, they love to take us and beat us up in soccer. We always have a church fellowship time of soccer. And since we had some Hondurans as translators, they decided the teams would be Nicaragua against the world. So it was us Americans with our Honduran translators against the Nicaraguans, and we got killed again, as always. We put up a pretty good fight, though. Yeah, we put up a pretty good fight. So we had fellowship at the soccer match. You can see people hanging out, both local church people and our team members. And that's the actual people that played soccer on the bottom. Ed Molina was with us, and it was his birthday during the trip. So the locals ran out and got him a cake. They loved Ed. Everybody down there loved Ed, you know. He was like their lost brother or something like that. And so we sang our American version of Happy Birthday, and then they sang their Nicaraguan version of Happy Birthday, and then he cut the cake. So it was great to have. He just kept walking around the whole week saying, I'm just blessed to be here. I just feel blessed to have this opportunity to be with you guys. So what did we do? We served in many different ministries. One was a children's nutrition center that they have every day, 5 days a week, with these kids. They teach them the Bible, and they feed them warm meals throughout the morning. And there's Anna with one of the girls. We had brought, like I said last fall, if you remember, we had a food or a clothing drive of young children's clothes, and we brought those down at the trip, and Indy brought some clothes, and we spread the clothes out, and then the mothers, when they came to pick up the kids, they would pick out some clothes for their children. And Anna said that some of the girls loved to pick out new dresses, and one of them wore a new dress later in the week at our children's fiesta. And so that was great, a great way to serve the community there. We always help fix up their computer lab, which is always in disarray because we only go every 2 years and we're the only ones that fix it up. So I think there was one or two working computers. There was no... Yeah. Oh, there was no working computers when we got there. It was even worse than I thought. And we left with, what, like 8 stations? 9 stations with computers. Where we brought a whole bunch of computers. We were just shoving computers in bags of luggage that we brought down there. And we had team members that spent time setting up the computers, adding antivirus and all that. So at least they're back up to having, and they serve the community in different ways with this computer lab. The medical clinic, they have a doctor on staff, and so our team members would go there and be shoved in this little room with a translator, and then the doctor would meet with the patient and then and help the patient physically and medically, and then send the patient into the room, and our team would help the patient spiritually, and then they'd kick him out, just a, you know, like a assembly line. And so we had team members that helped in the medical clinic. We also brought a whole bunch of medical supplies that Walter asked for, things like little measuring tools to measure sugar levels, and I forgot what they call that, and glucometers, I think? Yeah. And different supplies that the doctor asked for, we were able to pay for and bring over with us. There's the Dr. Walter and his wife and beautiful family, all his children. Really just a great example of a family living for Christ. He shared, actually the pastor shared about him that he had an offer as a doctor in Honduras at a salary 4 times what he is getting paid down in Managua. But he's down there on mission and willing to forego riches for the sake of the gospel. We did a lot of neighborhood outreach, and the photo on the left is our team. That's the actual alleyway. When we leave the church, we go through this alleyway into the neighborhood behind the church. That's the alleyway. We'd pair up with translators and Americans and send them out door to door. There's Grace and a translator sharing with some guy. Looks like Chuck. A little bit. Chuck was down there. And we would go into homes. This is actually a home that we spent, one of my team spent a couple hours in this home, and we gave the kid a coloring book as we were sharing the gospel with the adults, and he kept running back and showing us what he colored. He was excited to show us that. This was just a guy that Jonathan and I ran into. What was that guy's name? Donald Casco. Thank you. And he used to be a celebrity on TV in Nicaragua, but now is broke and just living in this little home. And he was so happy to have visitors to talk to, and he just shared, and he wanted to talk, and he prayed with us and sang with us. He sang. He was an artist and a singer, and we just had a great time. And I just realized, you know, people, he was very lonely. Just some people just want time to fellowship and be encouraged. And I was really moved by that experience. The pastor from Indianapolis, if you guys don't recognize him or know him, is Scott McLean, M-A-C, not M-C, not related to Chad's family. But Scott on the left here, his first time out in the neighborhood, he and his team went into this house and they never left. They were there the whole entire afternoon with this family. And the family kept bringing extended family members in and they all sat around. They had a pet bird, and so there's a bird sitting on Scott's shoulder. He's doing a selfie with the bird. They shared, and one of the family members was from out of town and shared how she'd been praying. She was a Christian. She'd been praying that someone would be able to break through with her family members with the gospel. And they did. That afternoon, the whole family prayed to receive Christ. Three generations. And grandmother, children, and grandchildren. And Scott said it was just like something out of the book of Acts where you read about a whole households coming to Christ. And they went back a couple other times that week to visit the family. The family came to some of the stuff we did. They brought local church members to meet the family to be able to follow up and all that. Bus stop outreach. This is where they would send us Americans to this incredibly busy bus stop with thousands of people coming and going and say, reach them. And that's Greg's reaction. But actually, it was a great place to meet people, pass out tracts. Everyone would open the tract and read it. And if they had time, they would talk to us. And it was a good experience. Bus stop outreach. University outreach. We spent time at a university that we hadn't been to before, the University of Managua. And this is a guy that Jonathan and I shared the gospel with that prayed to receive Christ. And we didn't spend a lot of time at the university, but had a good time, people that were there. They sent us to these schools that they knew the teachers in, and we didn't know exactly what to expect. One was like a middle school. We went in the morning. One was a high school in the afternoon. This one was the middle school. And basically, we showed up on the bus. We didn't know. We thought we were just going to help the teachers and like English lessons and then hopefully get a chance to share with the kids a little bit. But we show up, and the principal gathers like 50 kids into a room and says, go ahead. You have an hour and a half. And we're like, what are we supposed to do? Whatever you want. So we knew that they kind of thought we were going to teach them a little English. So we had 2 minutes. This is classic mission trip experience. We had 2 minutes to prepare a plan for 50 kids. So we got in the classroom. We sang songs with them and taught them English words by singing the song first in Spanish and then in English, like head and shoulders, knees and toes, and stuff like that. And then we gave out candy. That's one of our team members giving out candy at the end. We divided the kids into little groups. And with our translators and our team members, we would teach them about English words and share about our lives a little bit and then share the gospel with them. And kids would respond and receive Christ. There is that's John McLean, so that's Chad's brother there. That's a translator with his hand up against the fence, and that's a little group. And then we had craft projects for the kids to do, and so they'd rotate stations and do a craft and hear the gospel and play soccer. The boys that Jonathan and I were talking to, they were just like, when are we going to get to play soccer? And so we played soccer during part of the times. And then one of the most moving experiences, and we have never done this before there, was, the funny thing about the school outreach is in the afternoon, the team that went, we kind of were able to prep them then and say, this is what you're going to do, so be prepared. So they show up. But not only do they have 70 kids, not 50 kids, and supplies for 50. You no idea what's going to happen. And so we had people like, you know, I think Anna had a whole group of 20 kids to share the gospel with and different things. And so great experience. One of the new things that was a moving experience for me was the hospital outreach. The doctor took us to the hospital in town there, close to the church. And we prepared sandwiches. Our team prepared sandwiches and brought drinks and sandwiches there. That's our team in the afternoon that went. And half of our team went to the cancer ward and just went bed by bed praying and sharing the gospel and giving food to the cancer patients. The other half of us went to this... The photo on the left is the emergency room waiting room. This is a different hospital than you've ever seen. It's mostly outdoors with doors into the rooms. And it's just like everything in Managua, very flat and a lot of outdoor things. There's Anna passing out tracts. My half of the team, we went to this little dormitory building on kind of a little plot of land right near the hospital where patients' families would stay, because when they came down to the hospital, they'd come from maybe an hour away. They didn't have the funds to go back and forth, and so the family members would just stay there while their family member is being treated in the hospital. And so we went in the men's dorm, and there's Dave with a translator just going bed by bed, and then there's Jonathan and a translator with one gentleman. And they're just waiting for their family members as they're being treated in the hospital and healing. These guys, Jonathan and I shared with, very moving experience. These two, the father and son, and their mother was in the hospital. They were just so open to hearing, and they embraced the gospel so fully and excitingly. And they loved it. In fact, right now they're reading the tracts that we had gone through with them. The boy has a children's tract and the dad has a regular tract, and we gave him a Bible. And for 10 minutes, we were sharing with other people, but they kept reading and talking and pulling out the Bible and reading verses, and it was like, wow, so hungry for the gospel. Never seen people so ready and hungry for God's word like these two. Very great experience. Then we did construction outreach, and this was a family that the church chose for us to serve. Mother and husband and wife and two kids and father-in-law. And the mother goes to the nutrition center with the youngest child and comes to church sometimes. The husband works out of the country most of the time because he can earn more money, like in Panama and different places. And so he's gone a lot of the time. And so we decided to serve. The church down there wanted us to serve this family, which was very close to the church, within walking distance. And the husband came to church for the first time that week because we were there serving the church. And I think it was a very moving experience for the whole family. The mother told the pastor, "What will I tell the neighborhood about when they say, how are you getting your house done?" And the pastor said, "Just tell them the truth that the Lord provided." And so it was a great experience for the construction team. This is where the family was living. They have a little property there, and they're building the house in the front of their property, and in the back they're living in the meantime. So this is kind of where they're living. You can tell they don't have a roof over everything. They just kind of cook outside, and they have a little building on the front of their property where they make tortillas. That's their business, to sell tortillas. So the wife and a couple of neighborhood gals are making tortillas for the business during the day, washing outside. And this was the state of their house. So the husband and his father-in-law had got the house to this state. This took them 3 years to do this. They just did the outside walls. And the son in the family said, "Dad, this is going to take you 20 years to finish our house." And the dad had just come back from Panama and thought he would get a bunch of money there, and it didn't come through, so he still didn't have any money to work more on his house. And so the pastor of the church said, "Luis, what would you think about, we have a missionary team coming next month, what would you think about if we finished your house for you? Would you be interested in that?" And he's like, "Are you kidding? That would be awesome." So he was really pumped up. We poured about over $4,000 in materials we paid for the house. And then our team spent every day in shifts working on the house. Here they are, going to work with the steel, welding steel. This is getting the roof together, putting the roof on the house. Those are steel beams. They weld in place and then paint so they wouldn't corrode. There's John, our welder, up on the roof. And there's the finished roof. So that was an exciting project in and of itself. And then we got to work on the inside. So we're mixing cement there, stucco, where you throw cement against the walls, try to get it to stick. It's harder than you think. And their local construction guy that worked with us, Raul, was just laughing. He's taking videos of us trying to get the stucco to... He's going to show all his friends, look at these Americans. They don't know what they're doing. He had a great time. And here they are starting to build some of the interior walls. This whole house is, what, 18 feet by 20 feet, right? 20 by 24? 20 by 24, the whole house. That's where they're going to have bedrooms and their whole family and the father-in-law and a bathroom and a kitchen, the whole thing, and it's 20 by 24. We built these windows out of, what do you call that? Wrought iron. So our team cut all this stuff. John did most of this work, fashioned it, welded it, and then there's Chad and Josiah painting it. We didn't quite get to the point where they could put them in, but they're all ready to put in place. Beautiful work. And there's, unfortunately, we didn't get the house done, but that's the state that we left it in. It was water, the roof was watertight now, and the walls, you can see on the right, the wall is done being stuccoed, and different walls are in different places of being done stucco, and they're laying the tile on the floor right now. So unfortunately, we ran out of time, but they have the skill to finish it, so the local church leaders are going to take photos, show us the finished product. And we bought all the materials for him to finish the house. Everything he needed, he has. All the drywall, he has all the tile, every piece of supply that he needs to finish the house, and some cash that Scott gave him at the end to buy something nice for their home when it was all done. So we look forward to seeing the finished product, but we got him a good start, good hunk of the way there. Then we did some sightseeing. We only had one afternoon off to play. We were working the rest of the time. So we did a little sightseeing on Lake Nicaragua. That's Monkey Island. And did some shopping. There's on the lakefront in Managua, looking at the lake there. Trees, metal trees. Then the last day, at the very end, we went around the neighborhood and we invite with little tickets to a children's party. And we asked families, as we revisited the neighborhood families, we said, would you like to bring your child to a fiesta? And we'd give them a ticket and we'd tell them an adult has to come with the child. And we passed out 100 tickets. So our team is getting some of our supplies that we had brought ready. And then here, 6 o'clock, here they come. And we created quite the buzz in the neighborhood. People would come up to the church door all throughout the day and say, I didn't get a ticket. Can I get a ticket? And we just tell them, just come. You may not get a prize, but just come anyway. We didn't want to turn anybody away. And so we ended up, the kids came in with their parents, and we played games with them. There's Eric and Greg playing a bowling soccer game with kids, and we give candy if they won. There's Josiah playing Candyland. That's some sort of ball game. Bozo buckets. And then we gathered all the kids into the room upstairs. 144 kids and their parents showed up. Quite a crowd. Last time we did, it was half that. And so we were pretty packed in there with 144 kids. And we gathered them all together in the church room. And our team sang some children's songs for them. And then we split the kids up into groups, and in each group they shared the gospel. There's Josiah with his translator, Beto, sharing the gospel with a group. There's John McLean with his translator sharing with some kids, etc. And then what we did is at the end of the night, on the left, the team had put all these bags out for the kids. The bags were stuffed with hygiene items, school supplies, toys, candy, all this cool stuff. And then as kids, and we had extra prizes too, basketballs, soccer balls, frisbees. And as the kids left, they all got a prize bag and a track in it and candy and all that. And we encouraged the parents to come back to church. And the pastor there, Angel, was so excited. He just was like, to see all these people in the neighborhood filling his church. He just walked around for an hour after the party, just going, perfecto, excelente, ah, muy bien. He just kept at it. He was so excited and encouraged for his church to be able to serve all these families in the church. And that was our last activity. Then we packed and left the next day. So that's a little bit about what we did. We have some time, and we're going to have five of our team members come up, or four, I think, and come up and share. And so the first one up is Greg, going to just share some anecdotes. And then how about we just have Greg, Chad, and Dave, and John, just so you know the order. All right, come on up, Greg.
All right, so I'll try to be brief because I know we don't have very much time. Eric was also with me, but he got out of sharing because he didn't want to, and plus we don't have as much time. Anyway, so one of the things that I got to do with Ed Molina and Amanda, who was from, some of you may know Ed Molina. He used to be a member of our church. He's in Atlanta now, and he was one of our translators, but also Amanda was from Indiana. And so we got to go into the medical clinic, and I really wanted to go to that because I didn't get to last time. I went a couple years ago. And one of the things that really is just makes an impression on you is people really living with what they got. You know, the medical clinic and the photos don't give it a real good shot, but really it was clearly some sort of auto shop that has been converted. So it has the big main door. That's the main entrance, is a garage door. So, and then there's an office which used to be probably the receiving office. That's where the patients are. Basically, anyone that walks in is not turned away. And the primary, I was talking to Dr. Walter about this. I was just curious, what is the primary things that you're seeing in Nicaragua? And shockingly, he said the three main things, and they're the same things you experience. The three main things are diabetes, high blood pressure or hypertension, and obesity. Wow. You know, that's really shocking. So, or malnutrition. So it's like nothing in the middle of the road, all related to what's available. And so diabetes is very high. And when you go there and you eat some of the food, you can understand it's very high in starch and carbohydrates. And any of the desserts that we had were really very rich, at least for Americans, just really very sugary. You know, particularly those little cookies you guys remember we had. We looked like, oh, my gosh, you know, you barely get it down. But anyway, the thing that we got to, I'll just share that particular time. It was the one that impressed me. It was working very closely with Ed. He was our translator, and with Amanda, really, I hadn't worked with them in the gospel before, and it just clicked so well. So people would come in, we would say, hey, we want to pray for you, and would you like to hear about Jesus? Yes. There was never a no. Always, oh, I don't have time, I already go to a church. Even the person that said, you know, I'm Catholic, but I'll listen about Jesus. I want to hear what you have to say. And then we would pray for them. One person was a believer, and he just started crying. I mean, he was just glad to meet someone else because he was kind of alone and was just glad to talk to somebody else. That was quite an experience. He was hugging us and thanking us. And then particularly the last gal, just it hits you really hard. So you say, hey, you know, we have some things we'd like to, you know, if there's some clothing you'd like to give. And just what she said was, I will take anything you give me. You know, I have nothing. Yeah. So it was great because you're meeting other Christians that are struggling. You're meeting other Christians that are doing well. And everyone is in need. And you're really needed. You know, it's nice to be needed. And so I thought, for me, that was a really helpful, and to see Angel go perfecto. And I will share, David, you're going to be sharing a little bit? You're third. Okay. So I'll let you talk about the computer center. But that's about it. So I'll just leave that with you. Who is next? So Chad will come up. and share with us.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. In preparation for our trip, we were writing our testimonies and kind of just a history. And one of the things I put in my testimony was as a verse in Acts about how God sets the times and places of our habitation. And it was, I use that quite a bit talking to people in Nicaragua. They, I would say, we're here from the United States. We're here because God loves you. God loves all of us. And he sent me here to talk to you today. This was not arranged by anyone else. And that came up quite often. People would say, I'm Catholic, or yes, I believe in God, but I'm not practicing right now, or I have some promise that I've made. But it was just incredible to go and talk to the people. Nicaragua, in my mind, is a land of concrete and steel. And, you know, you hear about how poor they are physically, but then you talk to them, and I think they are very rich because they are very focused on what is really important, because they can see they don't have the wherewithal and the resources to take care of themselves. And people started talking about saying, aren't you glad to be going back to the United States? We're so blessed. And I thought, well, I think we're going back to the land of the distracted and the deluded, because we're distracted by all this stuff that we have. And at the end, you know, when we'd ask people, if you were to die today, are you going to heaven? You know, what would you say to God? And they were very interested. And here we came back and did the Teen Mission Conference, which sounded very similar. You know, you look at the schedule, it's very similar. People are going out and, you know, helping to clean up the stadium, or go to door-to-door talking to people, inviting them to church in the park on Sunday morning, and different things like that. And either they had a church and didn't want to talk because they were busy, or they weren't practicing, or they weren't interested. They were more interested in us asking about their dog or something than about their life. And so that was my experience. I was talking to this one guy at the bus stop, and he was maybe slightly on the spirits, meaning been drinking, I think. But he was, you know, you can just see that he really felt that how things had gone. He was divorced and separated from his wife, and it just really was affecting him. And then he had to go, and I just felt like crying, because here's a guy that he knows things aren't right. And I just, talking to him, I just got the sense that he couldn't believe that God is that good, that he has this gift that he gives to each one of us. And you need to accept the gift, take the gift, use the gift, or it does you no good. And so that was Omar. And then there was some other people. I mean, I saw two college students who said they weren't going to heaven because of their bad behavior. And so I kept talking to them about how their bad behavior was paid for. And they were Catholic, and they said, we should be looking for a church. We haven't done it yet. We just come to Managua from another city to go to school. And they live like three blocks from the church we were at. And so I said, I want to make sure they understand that you can be sure. You can answer, yes, I will be accepted. You know, I'm in God's family. And so we prayed, and they gave us their phone numbers and their email. I talked to Anna, Walter's wife, and she said, yes, we have their information. We'll follow up with them. And so, and they're two blocks from church. So those were kind of my perceptions and my experience.
Hello?
Hello. I'm on. All right. I had a little journal notebook that I took along so that I could jot down things through the week. It's a good thing I did because I wouldn't remember anything I'm about to say if I hadn't done that. But I'll just share a couple quick little thoughts. On Wednesday, we arrived, or rather, Wednesday was the first day out, really. And it was enough to give me some exposure to what it's like to live there. And as Chad was mentioning, they don't have a lot of things. But what I observed, my observation for that day, was that they seemed to have the important things. They had plenty of food. You've heard from Greg that they even have trouble with obesity, just like we do in our nation. And I'm not talking just about rice. They had meats. You know, we had beef, we had chicken, we had fish. We ate just fine. So God has provided what they, the important things. They had clothing, maybe not a lot, but they had important things. And they seemed very content and happy with it, something that maybe we need to learn. The next day, I was with the medical clinic for part of that day, and normally we would have a translator, but this day we didn't. So Walter, who is the doctor, had to do translating for us. So he set Josiah and I up right next to his desk, and then he said, I'll talk and deal with the patients, and then you can talk after. So these folks were coming in. Now I'm thinking to myself, this would never work in America. But these people didn't seem to blink an eye. Here we are, two perfect strangers. They're coming to see the doctor with some illness or ailment. They don't mind talking about it right in front of us. And so, you know, they're showing, oh, this is where I have my cut and contusion, and I have the problems up here. And so the doctor would deal with them, and then he would ask if we wanted to talk and then translate, and we'd share the gospel. But it was an observation to me that they're just not as uptight as we are about things. And I just think that would maybe be nice if it wasn't so tense. We end up living in a very tense way, and I enjoyed seeing them live more comfortably. And then on Thursday, this was a day... let me skip a little. I'll go on too long. When we were at the hospital on Friday, we were sharing, as you saw in the picture there, I was sharing with some of the men that were in the visiting family areas. And what I observed there was that so much of the same issues we have sharing the gospel here, we still have there. Even though people are very open and interested, it's the same issues. They're still hung up on works. They don't understand God's grace. Are they going to be good enough to get to heaven? And so they need to hear the same message that we give here. And so the training that we're getting here is actually preparing us for whatever nation we might go to. Certainly would work in Nicaragua. So then a little personal anecdote. On Saturday when we did the sightseeing, we then went afterwards to an area where there were lots of vendors selling their things. And it was a tourist trap, of course. But I had brought some money along, and I had separated my money, and I didn't have a whole lot, but I'd put it in three places. There was some in my wallet with me. There was some in a pair of pants in a buttoned-up pocket. There were some in the room, kind of hidden away, so that if I lost some of it, I'd still have some left. So I'm wanting to buy some coffee and use it as gifts for people. And I don't have enough for the 2 pounds I want to get. But I'm thinking, oh, I've got some money in the bus. So I'm on my way back to the bus. And then it dawns on me that, wait a minute, I didn't bring that along. I just have what's in the wallet. I don't have enough. So I was disappointed. I turned around, started going back. I guess I'll just have to get 1 pound. But as I walked, I decided to think, now where did I... What pants did I put that money in? Oh, I'm wearing them. And so I reached in, unbuttoned the pocket, reached in, and there was some money. So it was just a little thing that I thought God was taking care of me and providing. This was my one chance to buy the coffee, and now I could do it. So God had provided. On Sunday, This was one of the days I helped with the computer lab. Greg mentioned that. Greg worked on things first. I think he fixed a lot of hardware issues. I worked on things second, and I was dealing with a lot of software things. And we had issues connecting. We had issues just getting the virus, antivirus software. A lot of them didn't even have that. So we were just trying to make the machines healthy as well as operational. And it was so hot in that one room. But we came up with a number of recommendations that I think will make the lab a little bit more productive, and maybe next time we won't see it in such a decayed state. And it really could be a very useful draw, because not everybody has computers, and yet everyone needs to know about computers. I was mentioning they had food and covering, clothing. One other thing I noticed is a lot of people, not all, they had smartphones, as modern as what you and I have. So they have certain things. They don't have lots of things, and you saw the living conditions, but they have a lot of important things, and so that was interesting to me. On Sunday, working in that hot room, I went outside for a moment, and there was this cool breeze. It just was so refreshing. And then I began to realize, wait a minute, it's still about 85, and it's humid. But it just was showing me how quickly we accommodate. And so, you know, it was hot. The first day or two felt really hot. It's hot weather. It's around 90 every day. But you get used to that really quick. And then on Monday, with the fiesta, we did some more sharing in the neighborhood and preparing for the fiesta for the kids that night. And I'll just tell you that it's very encouraging that all the effort that we went to really caused a big response. And so the observation is, in Nicaragua, when you invite people to come to something, they come. In fact, they spread the word. I don't think we talked to so many families that came. I think they were spreading it themselves. So the last thought for you is, if you want to see the effects of your labor in the gospel and in the efforts that you do to try to reach out to people, and you'd like to see the great effect that can be had, then I suggest you go on the Nicaraguan trip next time. I'll say a word for Anna, too. She wanted to be here, but she's out of town today. But she wrote up a very nice after-trip letter, which she sent to almost everybody, I think. But if you didn't get one, tell me, and I'll make sure you get one. And also, I took a lot of pictures and videos, none of which you've seen, from Mike, and I've put them on Google Drive and shared them. So if you would like to be able to see what I have out there, and it's all really good, then tell me your email, and I'll make sure you can go and look at however much you want. Thank you.
This was my third trip to Nicaragua. Actually, for Mike and I think that's both of us have been there three times. And initially, I kind of had the laid-back, almost casual attitude toward it. I wasn't nervous. It's like, oh, this is going to be a piece of cake. but it wasn't in some ways. It was very good. I mean, God, it's good for us to get out of our own element of where we're at. And even though I knew of a lot of the things that I was going to be able going to see, it's still good to get out and away from your comfort zone. One thing I wanted to share too, that a few weeks before the trip, Mike had our team and the Indy team get together on a Sunday afternoon, and we got a chance to meet that team and get to know them a little bit more. And I thought that was very valuable, because as we, during the week, we worked with different people, and we knew them a little bit going into that. So I want to thank Mike for doing that, because I thought it was a very valuable thing to be able to do. A few people had mentioned about Ed being able to go, and he was just, as Mike said, it was just, he was so blessed, and yet his effect on so many people there was just dramatic. I mean, Ed obviously is very very fluent in Spanish, and he several of the days he was on the construction site with us and translating back and forth for us as we're working on different things. But I saw also how the trip affected him in some good ways, and I've been praying about that because he's away from fellowship for the most part, where he's living in Alabama. And excuse me, I don't want to get emotional here. The first night when we met and we're all singing, and they're singing a lot of songs in Spanish, and I'm standing next to Ed, and he is singing in Spanish. And just, you could see the emotion. And it was, I think for Ed, it was a very renewing time for that week. The other thing was, as I was coming up to the trip, I was spending time praying about different things. And the one thing that God had on my mind, actually, for the last 2 years, since the time we were there before, was the local guy, Raul, who was, he does construction, and basically he would take a week off of his job and come and serve the church. But he wasn't a member of that church. This was, they knew him locally, but he lives almost an hour bus ride away, and so he would come over each day and do the construction. And the previous time I was there, I was concerned about just where he was spiritually, and never really got the opportunity to sit down with him. I think it was the second day of construction, we had a little bit of a lull for the lunchtime, and he didn't need to stay, so Ed and I invited him to come and eat with us back at the church for lunch. And it's about a two-block walk, and we're talking, and as we get to the church, we talk some more, and he understands the gospel. I believe he's a Christian, but he's not. After a good 20 or 30 minute conversation, he was challenged to really step up in his personal life. And there's a local church near where he lives, and he's been to a few times, and he wants to get him and his family back there. And I was very encouraged with that. I got a chance to reconnect with Anna, who was the woman and her two sons who we built the house for 2 years ago. And she showed some pictures of some of the things that they've done with the house on the inside, which was very neat. And I also got to meet her new husband. And she got married in this last year, and her husband and her kids come to the church. And it was just another example of how God can use things like that to really affect people's lives. And then in the house construction, I spent a majority of the time there. Originally, I had scheduled for some other outreach, but as the way things worked, I ended up being there more. But the first day, I met Luis, who was the husband, the owner there, and talking through Ed, that's when we found out that he had been working on this house for 3 years. And you saw the picture of basically there was just some concrete and cinder block walls, and there was a concrete floor, and that was what he had accomplished in that time. And we came in and in a week moved the construction forward to the point that probably in another week or two they should be able to move into the house. And it one thing that God showed me was that he had no, Luis had no idea what God was going to do over the last 3 years. He had been, you know, it really caught my attention, the fact that God provided in a way that he had no idea was coming. And I think for ourselves, we tend to kind of get stuck in a rut maybe sometimes, and we kind of limit what God can do because we only look at our circumstances of what we can do or maybe some others around us. But in this case, God brought a group of people in and brought funds in that were just totally out of left field and really blessed this family. But on top of that, spoke to the neighborhood in the same way. Like 2 years ago, we had opportunities right in the neighborhood. And this house is only a few blocks from the church, and we were doing outreach. One of the days I was out, we were literally three doors down from this house talking with people. And they saw what was going on with the construction in the house. One thing that, just a side note to the how people live there, we tend to look at how we live in the suburbs here, and there are different areas. Some suburbs are more affluent, others are less affluent, but they're kind of, everybody sort of has the same standard of living, and that's not the case there. I've got some pictures, and if you want, I can share. But there were, as we were walking, like from the hotel or from the church, and you would walk down a block, and there would be this house that was very nice, painted stucco, nice wrought iron gates and windows, and a couple of them even had mowed grass. And then two doors down, there would be a house that you would think you wouldn't want to put your lawnmower there to store it. That's how primitive it was. It was basically a few pieces of tin and a roof. And God really just caught me with that. It's just that there is such a, I can't think of the right word, just the difference there. But actually, all of those people, whether they're affluent or not, need God. And we got to talk in the one day that I got to go out, we got to talk with people in both of those situations. And for the most part, they were all receptive to at least listening to what we had to say. And I just, as was shared before about how this, our culture here, we're sort of closed off to listening to God. But I was very encouraged by that. I guess I'll just end with that. And I look forward to going back again in 2 years. So.
Well, thanks, everybody. Just some prayer requests. Maybe we just take a moment and the gospel seeds that were planted would grow, sprout new life. There'd be effective follow-up by the church. Protection from the evil one for new believers. Many would join in the local church, the leaders, and for the leaders in their future plans. Why don't you just take a moment and just pray to yourself some of these things as the music team comes up, and they'll then say amen and lead us in a couple closing songs.